Hi, I'm Kathy Miller, professor of medicine at the Indiana University School of Medicine in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to Medscape Oncology Insights, coming to you from the 2016 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. Genomics are increasingly driving cancer research and informing clinical decisions in the care of our breast cancer patients. Here to update us on this emerging field is my next guest, Dr. Nikhil Wagle, assistant professor at the Harvard Medical School and deputy director of the Center for Cancer Precision Medicine at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you.
So first, genomics means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. When you talk about genomics, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. When I talk about genomics, I'm thinking about what's the underlying structure of the DNA and the RNA in the tumor cells, and how can we use that information both to understand the behavior of the tumor and the cancer and to exploit that information to make better treatment decisions.
So there are some genomic-based assays available in the commercial space. Which of those do you think you really use in your own practice?
Yeah. So, you know, there are a couple of genomic and precision medicine tests that are part of standard of care. I think the simplest one in breast cancer is understanding what subtype breast cancer is. And so that's not strictly a genomic test, but even things like understanding receptor status, ER status, PR status, and HER2 status helps us really distinguish between the type of cancer and what treatments to use. Beyond that, the most commonly used genomic test that's part of standard of care is the Oncotype DX test or the MammaPrint test, which helps you think about the need for chemotherapy in the early stage setting.
So I think you just made this topic less frightening for many people.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think we had reflected back that when we were assessing for estrogen receptor and HER2, we really were doing a rudimentary form of genomic testing.
I think so. I think precision, I often use genomics and precision medicine together. But when you think about precision medicine, what we're really trying to do is figure out the molecular, genomic, pathological, and clinical characteristics that help us make the right decision for the patient. And so knowing whether something is ER positive is a really important decision because it changes what types of drugs we're going to use. And genomics really just adds more layers of information on top of that.
More layers of information often means a whole lot more layers of complexity.
Yes.
How are we ever going to sort through this huge volume of data and make it information instead of chaos?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge. And it's because our technology right now is so far ahead of our ability to interpret it and to act on it clinically. And so one of the areas where we run into trouble is when we conflate the types of things we're doing in the research setting and the types of things that are ready for prime time or ready for use in clinical medicine. And so in the research setting, it's an incredibly exciting time. We have technologies that allow us to look at the whole genome or all the proteins in the cell and really try and understand how those affect response to treatment or resistance. But in the clinic, to be able to really use something and make a decision, these things need to be rigorously tested. They need to be part of clinical trials. We need to prove to ourselves that when you see a particular genomic alteration and that makes you choose a particular drug, that has a positive impact on the patient. And it's that translation between the research world and the clinical world where a lot of work is being done, but we need more information.
Now, you have a fascinating project that I think has really captured the imagination of our patients, the MBC project.
Mm-hmm.
Why are my patients asking me to send you tumor samples in Boston?
Yeah, so great question. The MBC project was born out of the idea that we can learn a lot about breast cancer, and we can learn a lot about how to better treat breast cancer if we can study as many tumor samples and medical records and saliva samples from patients as possible. And part of the problem is that historically, the samples that have been studied have been from those patients who are cared for at the large academic cancer centers. And by some estimates, only about 15% of adult cancer patients in the U.S. go to these large academic medical centers. So that means that the vast majority of patients, their tumors have never been studied for research, and largely because no one's ever asked them if they'd be willing to donate their tissue for research. And so the MBC project really seeks to engage patients around the country and partner with them in order to try and accelerate metastatic breast cancer research. And so what it means is that patients can go online to our website, mbcproject.org. They can sign up. They can say, I have metastatic breast cancer. I'm potentially willing to contribute information, maybe samples, and I'd like to be part of the research team. And when they do that, they become part of this project, and they send a saliva sample. We go and we get their medical records. We go and we get a portion of their tumor tissue, and we analyze it. We analyze the genomics of that tumor tissue, and that will then go in a large database, which will be freely accessible to all for all researchers to use. And so they're asking to send their tissue to Boston, but so that it can go into a big database that anyone around the world can use to study.
So it's a hugely successful project. What have you learned from this so far?
Yeah.
And perhaps the first thing is, if you ask, patients will come.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's the first lesson. So we launched this a year ago, and in the first year, 3,000 women and men with metastatic breast cancer around the U.S. have signed up. We have people from all 50 states, people who live near academic centers, people who live nowhere near academic medical centers. And so you're right. The first lesson is, if you ask patients to participate and you make it easy for them, they're more than happy to say, count me in, I want to be part of this. The second thing we've learned is that you can get a lot of information simply by asking patients to tell you about themselves. And so, you know, we are getting medical records and abstracting medical records, and we will have full medical information from every participant. But in the meantime, patients are telling us what kind of cancer they have, when they were diagnosed, and that information alone is incredibly valuable. We have now sequenced the first 100 tumors or so from the patients that have participated, and I'm excited that everything seems to be feasible. We're getting 10-year-old tumor tissue that are being mailed to us from across the country, and those have been successfully sequenced in our lab. And so we're really hopeful and confident that as we grow this project, we will be able to generate this incredibly large database of clinical data and tumor samples.
So it's going to be a gold mine for research for decades to come.
Yeah.
Will the patients who participate get anything from this?
Yeah, it's a great question, and one we get asked all the time. And so this goes back to my what I said before about research versus clinical use of genomic medicine. This, the Metastatic Breast Cancer Project is a research project. So patients are donating their tissue, donating their information in order to create this big research database for us to make advances in developing new treatments and treatment strategies. What patients get back is what we share with patients are discoveries, our progress, and the aggregate data that we generate, just like we share with the researchers. What this isn't right now, in large part because of regulatory and logistical reasons, this isn't, we don't have the ability to sequence someone's tumor and return their individual result back to them for clinical purposes. There are companies and there are lots of private institutions that can do something like that. This is largely to generate a research database. But patients are certainly informed of what we're doing every step of the way and are kept as partners throughout.
So when we think about sequencing patients' tumors, there are a lot of other questions that come up that I think maybe haven't been given the attention that they deserve. One is that while you're sequencing the patient's tumor, the tumor came from the patient, mm-hmm. And any germline mutations that came with that patient are likely to be reflected in the tumor. Now, that might not always be. If there are large chromosomal losses, you might lose that information. But how do you handle that? When you've talked to a patient about sequencing her tumor in your own clinic with the goal of using that for clinical decision-making, and then you stumble on a germline abnormality, that's usually not part of the discussion when we're talking about sequencing a patient's tumor.
It's a great question.
Should it be?
Yeah, I think you raise a really important complexity in the era of genomic medicine, which is secondary findings, sometimes called incidental findings, mm-hmm. right? You're looking to be able to answer one question, and then you stumble on a result inadvertently that answers a different question, and you don't know if the patient wants to know that information.
And it has implications for other people.
And it has implications potentially for
family
members.
That are not the patient.
That's right. And so this is actually a big area of study. And so at our institution, we've been working on a study with the NHGRI, the National Human Genome Research Institute, which helps us try and answer these questions. We actually, in that study, we consent patients to do whole exome sequencing of their tumor as well as their germline, and ask patients about incidental findings and whether they would like to be informed about incidental findings in the germline that may affect them or their family members. And if they do want to find out about those, and we find them, we involve genetic counselors. But that's part of a big research study, and the question is, how do we translate that information and what we learn to routine clinical practice? So I don't think there's an answer in the field yet. I think that people struggle with the idea of, should we test the germline? When we test the germline, it actually makes interpreting the tumor much easier. But along with that comes these complexities of how do we deal with the information. And I think the most important thing is to make sure patients are informed about what they're getting and that we have resources to be able to help patients with any decisions they might need to make.
So what's your next hope for the MBC project? You've proven it's feasible. Patients will come. You can get the information, get the material to do the sequencing. What's the first thing you hope to now use this resource to understand?
So there are so many pressing questions that we want to be able to answer. I'll tell you a few of the ones that we're excited about. One is we can use this database to find rare groups of patients that may have been understudied to date. So one example of those rare groups of patients are patients who have had extraordinary responses to some therapies. So every so often, a patient will get a therapy, have a dramatic response to that therapy, or will be on that therapy for many more years than anyone expected. And we can potentially learn from those patients and understand, was there something different about their tumor that made them respond so well to that particular therapy? And can we use that information to either design therapies for other patients or find other patients that might also respond to that therapy? And so we've identified hundreds of patients who have extraordinary responses to specific chemotherapies and targeted therapies, and so we're excited to start to see if we can understand why those patients respond well. We've also started studying patients who present with metastatic disease, so de novo metastatic breast cancer. A relatively small group of patients compared to the patients who present with early stage breast cancer, but whose tumors might help us understand the metastatic process and how metastasis happens to begin with. And then we've talked to lots of other researchers around the country who have their own important questions, and we hope to be able to generate a number of demonstration projects where other researchers can say, this is the question I want to answer, and I want to use the MBC project data for that. So I imagine a lot of these projects will start to get described over the next year or so.
Thank you, Nick, for joining us. This is going to be an era that we'll be talking about for years to come, and with so much for us to learn.
Thanks for having me.
This is Dr. Kathy Miller reporting from the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium in 2016. Thank you for joining us.